Okay, thank you. Quite a positive morning when we speak about UK forestry and Scottish forestry. And what a lot of people don't probably realise is this is the best-selling forest machine in the world. It was designed 3 miles from here. So at times we maybe don't give us a good enough pat on the back, but I think we actually do quite a good job over here in promoting what we do. So yeah, this was, and I think we made a good job of this one. So I would suggest that was before the heavy drams were drunk that night we designed this one. Right, I'm going to say a bit about the importance of innovation as we go forward when we look at production in machines, when we look at the challenges we've got with people coming into industry. And again, a lot of it's maybe more local based. Some of the things we'll talk about are certainly global perspectives, but probably more about what happens here. Changing demands, yeah, they never change. Customer demands, what industry demands, what you folks demand as foresters, and what legislation demands, and that one doesn't always help us build machines, believe it or not. Solutions, some different interactions we look at when we design a machine. And yeah, I guess we talk about the importance to get people into the forest in the future. They like these exciting technologies, and if we don't present them in a forest machine, they probably won't come and drive it. So even to get the future harvester driver, we need to have the right innovation in the machine to get them to start with. So that's really important. Demands and drivers. So what creates or what pushes the development of a forest machine? It's 100 things. The biggest thing is, and we spoke about Canada there, we speak about all around the world, it's a continuous pressure to increase productivity. Every machine we bring out, we're expected to be more productive, to use less fuel, to be easier to work. And that's where we're going. As we go forward, I think it's quite obvious that we're going to see them in more challenging conditions. And yeah, we need to be sustainable. We need to leave less of a mark in the forest, less of a carbon footprint, everything else. And yet, legislation, it doesn't necessarily make the demands easier to achieve, and we'll say a bit about that. So yeah, if I speak to customers, and I speak to a few, it's normally quite raised voices, but I speak to a few. So if a customer told me what they want, they would say the demand for a more powerful, more durable, more productive machine. You think, yeah, that's fine, we can do that. And the next moment before they'll say the machine should be lighter than they're currently available. Yeah, okay, that gives us a challenge. They should climb further and they should also be better on soft ground. So right away you've got three total opposites in building a machine, and that's quite a challenge. And yeah, as we go forward, the machine should offer more integrated functionality, but yeah, they need to be easier to operate. So if anyone has a blueprint for that, I think we'll give you a job. But yeah, that's what we're up against. So it is. So again, how we kind of break that down and we maybe simplify things. So we'll look at how the machine interacts with different interfaces, if you like. So yeah, with safety standards, industry practice and what we need to do. I mean, as I say, we need to do quite a lot. And how we kind of look at it is we'll look at the information interface, operator interface, the interface with the stem, which I guess is what you guys are really interested in. And again, the interface with the surface. So that's the four main components of the machine we can look at and try and adjust as we go forward. So yeah, probably the boring one to start with. What will industry demand? Yeah, what will the crops of the future be? It's great to hear people this morning talking about more straighter crops. We can take the knives off a harvesting head right away. If you can build straight trees, we can harvest them a lot easier. But we probably better not change too quick. Yeah. What will be the rotation? What will be the size? What trees do we need to cut in 20 years' time? Will stem processing be done in the forest or the sawmill? Big change from here to Canada. From what I'm going to focus on and what John focused on is completely different. We optimise everything at stump here in Europe and in America. They cut it full length and then they take it and make that decision in the sawmill. So how does the global change go there? How will future regulations determine design of forest machines, safety standards, ROPs, environmental restrictions, occupational things? How long is it fair for someone to sit on there? It's a big effect. Will future regulations demand a zero emissions machine? Yeah, that could be interesting. And again, if we look at a lot of machine design in the past 10, 12 years, it seems like every 3 years we've had to put a new engine in a machine to get these tiny particles, not take them out of the exhaust anymore. So yeah. And again, there's already a lot of research and development in this. It's quite challenging to put that in a forest machine. So in other parts of John Deere, yeah, so we can We can today offer a zero emissions forest machine, but it wouldn't lift many 49s, I don't suppose. Elsewhere in the Enterprise, this thing is 55 tonnes. So we have actually a hybrid electric loading shovel in production today using a lot of these new power technologies. So that's, but again, what we said, there are some challenges. If we look at a lot of how electric generation is done in vehicles and even the loading shovel, it uses the brakes to generate a lot of power. Now, you could disconnect the brakes in a forest machine, you'd never miss them. So we've something to learn there, so we have. So that's kind of boring. So yeah, if we look at the information interface, and again, this isn't new, but it's totally underutilised in the UK. We talk about cloud-based technology and data transfer between machines. This is a kind of 20-year-old story where you could email production from a harvester to a forwarder and back into an office. I guess what's changed, this is the customer demand. We now want it in a phone. We want to see different things, and it's now cloud-based. So again, on the phone that's in my pocket, I can actually look at alarms coming up on every machine in the UK this morning. I can look at what the machine's produced. I can look at what diesel is used. So that's here and now. And again, what will drive that in the future is what people want to see. There's a lot of talk about data transfer and cell coverage as well. And I would say one of the big changes we've made here is actually understanding what people want. We set away with this 20 years ago trying to show people everything. It's impossible to show people everything when you've no phone signal in Argyll. So what we've tried to do is really compress the information we send, and we find it's actually working in Scotland today. Live inventory data. For you guys, rather than make a phone call to the stubborn forwarder driver, it'd be really nice to see how many cubic metres of logs were at roadside. That information's available now. So as we can also monitor machine performance, we can monitor operator performance, we can give them a score of 1 out of 5, which isn't very popular with a lot of them when you give them a 1. No, it's not. Remote help and diagnostics, we can actually plug into a machine, similar to if you buy a PC from Currys and it stops working and the little guy in the office connects independently. We can do that on a forest machine today. Transport logistics we can look at, and route optimizations may be a big one. How efficient are the forwarders in the UK today when we look at ground damage? I would consider they're not very, so we'll talk a bit about that. If we look at the STEM interface, which again, funnily enough, for working in forestry for all my life, I don't know a lot about trees. I kind of know a bit more about machines, so this is your area of expertise. The ultimate target is to preserve and maximise the value of forest and trees. So what does that consist of? We need precise measurement. That's a given. That's also a long-term story. Length and diameter measurement has been quite successful, I'd say, going back 30 years. And I think everybody in this room would be quite happy that we get that. Where the big change will come, I would say, in the next 10 to 15 years, and there's development on it, is quality. A machine needs to measure timber quality before it cuts the tree or during cutting the tree, and that will be a huge step forward. There's different thoughts on how this will work. So will it be an observation of density? You know, anti-slip on there so the harvester doesn't do it? And when is the quality measured? Is it before we harvest or during the harvest? And I would say there'll be systems developed actually to take both on board. I think Enda will speak tomorrow about some of the tree scanning technology we've been using in the past few years. It is possible now to put in the coordinates of a tree to a harvester and tell it how to cut it based on a pre-measurement from there. So that's the type of technology that's available. And yeah, so pre-scanning of whole trees. And again, what's very important is no damage to remaining trees and no damage to the ground when we're doing that. So that's kind of where we're looking for with the STEM interface. If we look at the surface, yeah, John showed some quite interesting pictures of skidders being stuck and machines lying on their side. Unfortunately, we have a full library of them over here as well. Our conditions in Scotland, I tend to think, and Wales as well, if you look at the slopes, are probably the harshest in the world. I think our designers would actually now agree with us on that. I don't think it's any exaggeration to say some of the sites we do in the West Coast, if it was in America, it would be done with a helicopter. We do it with harvesters and forwarders, so that's just how we do things here. So what are we looking at here? Yep, energy-efficient drive lines. We might not have a fully electric machine, but yeah, it's quite possible to have an electric drive line. Steep slope solutions, yeah, I could stand here and talk about this all day. That's almost been fixed. Modern harvesters, I mean, we designed a harvester that can climb 37 degrees and we brought it down 55, and that's without putting a windrope in the back. So I would say steep ground, we're quite happy that we can probably accept most challenges people throw us for steep ground. Where a harvester won't work, it's obviously a cable system. So I don't see steep ground being a huge problem as we go forward. That's my opinion. Low ground pressure, yeah, that's a lot of technology in the past few years as well. And again, sometimes that can be quite simple. Sometimes it can be a longer bogey, it can be a wider track, it could be whatever. If you look at the UK now, it's completely dominated by eight-wheeled harvesters. Generally, the ground pressure on the rear axle is about 37% different than a six-wheeler. So there has been a huge influx there in the past few years. And maybe one good thing for the UK compared with Canada is we have quite a young machine fleet in the UK. I would suggest a machine with its 30-year-old wouldn't last very long in here, so we're quite lucky there. We've now got automation to manage adaptation to ground conditions. Most machines in the market now, there's automatic levelling, vibration damping, obstacle negotiation's a bit different. Anti-slip, some we talk about, you know, we all drive cars, and if we hit a puddle, there's a little light comes on and tells us we're losing grip. You'd think that would be available in a forest machine. So then the forwarder driver might actually take his foot off the throttle and not bury it to the axles. So that could be something really simple in a forwarder to put anti-slip in there to stop guys burying machines. I guess the problem being, and back to what John said, it would need to be quite a durable sensor somewhere around about a machine bogey to last any longer than about 2 minutes. So we've got a challenge here. Yeah, and minimise damage to the forest floor. Again, it's not new. For 15 years, we've had a programme where... In eucalyptus, and again, you'll know the crops better than me, but it's very, very sensitive in eucalyptus for the growth of how compact the ground is. We can follow a thinning truck with a machine within 20 centimetres of a thinning truck we've done 20 or 30 years before because of GPS. So we can actually eradicate a lot of ground damage even by that type of innovation. Yeah, so surface interface is complicated, then we'll add in a driver and screw everything up. One thing, there's huge innovation involved in, and actually huge progress, is optimization of forwarder extraction. What we generally get to know is a forwarder driver will turn up, and depending on what some of you guys say in any given day, he'll take out 4.9s, or he'll take out 3.7s, or pulp, whatever, and he'll generally get a picture like this. He'll have no idea what's where, and then if it snows, which we don't get a lot of, then you think, so where is the timber? So that's quite a tough challenge for even a good forwarder driver. What will probably happen very soon, and actually we've got some test machines, is it'll be optimised. So if you say you want a load of 4.9s, the machine will actually drive around all the 4.9s, they'll be colour-coded, tell you where they are, and it'll probably challenge you that you're going an inefficient way. So we can go the quickest way to get that load, or the quickest way to extract that whole site. So if you look at ground damage, if you look at carbon footprint, that's quite a big step forward in technology. And as I say, there's actually prototype machines working in Scotland. There's four at the moment working with this technology on them. And that really does open up a raft of innovation there. So yeah, then we get back to operators. And yeah, life would be easy if it wasn't for operators and staff and customers. But unfortunately, we've got them. We do acknowledge, and I think everybody in here acknowledges, that in the future we need to do more with less. We acknowledge that the future operators might be less skilled than we have today. A few reasons for that, but I think it's an acknowledgement that's there. It's there for essential automation kind of focusing that. The machine needs to make more decisions than the operator. And again, back to what John said, but that needs to be in key areas. A machine will never fully harvest a harvesting site. They'll not be that good. Where we see that is really intelligence. Certain functions on a machine will continue to become more intelligent and replace operator input. Which really, I mean, I like to think myself as quite young. I know I'm not, but that's maybe something in my head. But even in the time I've been working with machines, there's been a huge advance in how we control a machine. The first machines I worked on when Jeff was my boss at the commission way back then, you know, you're operating a machine with 8 levers. It was like playing a piano. We're now down to 2 levers with many levers. And what we now say is actually we can go one better than that, and the machine will operate itself with some things. So we have launched a solution called Intelligent Boom Control. And for anyone that kind of used to be driving a machine, you can work the three functions of a crane and one lever now, which when you take away from the eight levers down to two, it kind of does it itself. This has been a huge innovation, and it will continue to do this. And maybe if you can actually then, the best way to explain it is we know exactly where the boom tip is all the time. So the innovation of a self-loading forer is very, very close. The operator will still need to grab the timber, but when the timber is grabbed, the operator just needs to get the load back into the load space of a forder. And that innovation is very, very close to happening, where a forder will take some of those functions and work itself. So yeah, did it work? We've actually, yeah, the machine knows better. So cycle time, because of IBC, has decreased by 44%. So that's a new hashtag for us, I guess. The machine knows best. So yeah, he's finished. And this video is actually with an experienced operator in Sweden. So if you look at this technology being applied to an inexperienced driver, we have huge, you know, innovation to do there. So yeah, autonomous forest machine. There's no doubt that machines of certain functions may become more autonomous in the future. My own opinion is the dynamic situation in a forest for safety. I don't think we'll get a fully autonomous machine yet. Remote control, yeah, we might be able to do it, but the dynamic nature of the forest might be a limiting factor in there. So again, yeah, where do machines go? Just to wrap up, it really depends on the speed of each of these. How will standards dictate? What information do you guys look for? Yeah, what will be the stems we cut? How do we need to protect them more? Yeah, is there going to be more rainfall? Do we need to look at low ground pressure? Do we need to go to more slopes? Probably both. And what will the operators do? So yeah, where are we left with? Yeah. So that could be the future harvesting machine. I don't think it'd be very good for thinnings, but it might be okay for a clear fell. I think with some of the wind in the west coast of Scotland, might have some challenges as well, just to hover long enough to cut a tree. Yeah, and his mate in the forwarder. And maybe kind of more realistic. So yeah, again, continued innovation, I think, is the only way to ensure profitable operations. How that really affects in the next few years, let's wait and see. But it needs to be done in the right way. You know, this guy thinks he's very innovative. So he does. Luckily, that machine's not in Scotland. I don't need to worry about the warranty costs. So it's not. So. Okay, thank you.